You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled and marginalised artists and their art. You can support the podcast by signing up to Patreon. And oh my God, guess what? There's a new Patreon tier. If you've ever wanted to ask a writer for advice on drafting or a drag king for tips on wigs, you could now join the Curiouser and Curiouser tier. This lets you ask the talented creatives on the podcast something you're dying to know about art or life or anything, really. And I'll ask the next most fitting guest for their thoughts. This will help me to do things like buy transcript software to make the podcast more accessible. And eventually, if I get enough of you, I can pay my podcast guests. What? I know. Wild, right? Find out more on the Patreon page. You can also buy me a coffee on Buy Me a Coffee, which you can find on my link tree. And now, on with the show. Today on the podcast, I've got Jasper Peach with me, who is a trans, non-binary and disabled writer, speaker and parent. They are passionate about equitable access and inclusion, focused around the dismantling of misplaced shame via storytelling. Their written work has been published in The Age, Higher Up, The Big Issue, Archer, The Guardian, Veranda, Australian Poetry Journal and SBS Online. With a background in Auslan interpreting, broadcasting and civil celebrancy, writing has continued their personal trend of being all about communication and community. Their first book, You'll Be a Wonderful Parent, was published March 2023 by Hardy Grant and is a celebration of rainbow families of all kinds. Jasper, you are right up my street. Welcome to Cabinet of Curiosities.
Oh, I like being here up your street. It's very nice. Do you know, I got a photo today sent to me from my buddy who's a musician. She's traveling from Australia. She's over in London at the moment. And she sent me a picture of my book in a museum bookshop.
Oh, my God.
And I just went, what? Really? Wow. Okay. Sure.
That's sure. Amazing. Which museum?
Oh, what's it called? Hold on. Please hold while I check what the nouns are that I need to say. Welcome collection. Welcome with two L's.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Okay.
I know. So,
listeners,
unexpected.
Buy Jasper's book like right now.
You really should. Yeah.
Really should. So tell our listeners, let's just jump straight in. Tell our listeners a little bit about your book.
Okay. So You'll Be a Wonderful Parent is a parenting book, but it is not one of those books that you will buy and never read because it's too dense or because it feels like homework or because there's too many words and not enough space or because it's overwhelming or because it feels like you should. It's what people are calling it, the friendly little banana. It's this bright yellow book with rainbow squiggles on the cover. And it's a book for parents or prospective parents in the LGBTIQA+ community. These books do not exist. They do not exist. There isn't a friendly, easily accessible, illustrated book of, yeah, you can do this. Yeah, you are represented. Yeah, you are visible. Yeah, you are welcome into this space. There is not a book like this. This is the book that I needed about how old's our kid? Oh, so they are, our oldest kid is 6 and we tried for 4 years to have them before they arrived on planet Earth. And so I guess, gosh, that's 10 years ago I needed this book. But the same messages are coming to me every day in my DMs. Oh, this is just what I needed. Thank you so much. Or, oh, I needed this 3 years ago. But you know what? There still hasn't been representation in all that time. And so here we are. We've got a book.
Wow.
It's okay. We can do this.
Yeah. And parenting is such a topic that's steeped in gendered language and kind of it's very connected to like cishet norm. So how did you find navigating that and how, like, what does your book bring? Because it sounds like it brings like a release of all the expectations and moving away from shame. But yeah.
Yeah, I was so shocked by how gendered that world is. There's a lot of medical interaction that you go into, particularly if you're using assisted reproductive technology, like IVF or IUI or any of the other things that you can do these days. And I was not prepared to feel like, oh, am I allowed to do this?
Mm.
Or because it's all mums and dads and that's who we are talking to and anyone else. Oh, yes, well, we obviously meant you as well. We're just not going to say that. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's like you go into any kind of parenting space and you're back to Ladies Bring a Plate and See You After World War One. You know, it's really strange. I'm not the kind of person who would really be fazed about, you know, my gender or my sexuality. And I have great support. I have a very loving family, both logical and biological, and my first family as well, very supportive. So it was really strange to me that I left birthing class in tears thinking, oh, I can't do this. I'm not allowed to do this. Mm. And yeah, really, really took me by surprise. And I thought, oh, well, if this is how I feel, how are people who don't have support feeling and how are people who can't quite put it into words feeling? Are they just feeling bad? That's not okay. Let's do something about that.
Mm. And I can imagine that a lot of people can relate to that experience. I currently haven't got any kids, haven't got any intention to have children, but we do have a dog. And this is, it's the most ridiculous comparison to make. But from the moment you get a dog, you're a dog parent, which means people are going to want to throw terms at you. And so I'm a dog mom. Yeah. I am a dog mom. I have suddenly become a gendered thing again. I've gone from being very comfortable being non-binary and my partner's wonderful to like everyone going, oh, mummy. And I'm like, oh, that makes me feel a bit nauseous. something that you get like thrust into all of a
sudden. Yeah.
Kind of have to deal with. So I can imagine when you're like a parent of like a non-furry child, that's even more intense.
You know, I've had some beautiful feedback from people who read the book, not because they are parents or prospective parents, but because they saw it and thought, oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen a book like that before. Or that maybe they're my friend, or there's various reasons why people pick it up, or maybe they like things that are yellow. And they've said, oh, I really felt included in this book, even though it has nothing to do with me, because I really wanted no one to feel left out when they read this book. And that includes people who have no intention of becoming a parent. Mm. I think family is such a loaded word, isn't it? It should be a neutral term, but it comes with so much baggage and tradition and all these things that other people think and experiences we may have had. But I really believe, and I live my life in a way that I am instilling these values in myself with everything I do, and I'm trying to show my kids with everything that I do and everything that I am that family is what you make it. And if there is love, care, community, devotion, and also a bit of leaving your ego at the door, that's a family, you know? The way you care for your dog, the way your dog loves you unconditionally, that's a family. It's just as, you know, there's no hierarchy here. I just don't think that there is. And I think that gendered stuff creates hierarchies where they don't really belong. And why do they do that? What's that about? Are they feeling a bit insecure? I don't know. I wouldn't want to be casting nasturtiums on anyone, but that could be what's going on.
Absolutely. It definitely makes a lot of people feel very uncomfortable as soon as you start to challenge the social constructs and expectations that are also, sorry, that I will say that are also relatively kind of recent, because going back, we did have kind of a larger family model. We did have more of a community, and some cultures still do. Whereas in our country and in Australia as well, I think broadly speaking, it is very much like the nuclear family. And that's the most revered example of family that we see. Whereas I love to see, especially in books, and I don't know why, like I read so many books where there's these gorgeous kind of, you know, like there's maybe a mum and then like two other mums and then also a dad who's got a husband, and then everybody is raising this child who is so lucky to be so loved and surrounded by so much.
Yeah, a lot of the book is about how intentional our families are in the LGBTIQA plus community, that there is a lot of thought behind them. There's not many whoopsie families. There's a lot of, hey, we really align with our values and we get along great and we want the same things and we're willing to work together. And when there's conflict, we're going to work it out this way because there's always conflict, even if it's happy, sunshiny, rainbow days. And that creates this intentional living that it challenges everything, right? Yeah. It throws up, well, do I have to go to the supermarket for my food? Where else could I get food from? Oh, if the neighbors are growing lemons, maybe I could grow oranges. Maybe we can share, you know. And I'm not someone who has a functional vegetable garden. I don't know why I said that, but but you see what I mean? Like you start to look at, well, why are we doing it this way? Do we have to?
Yeah.
How would we do it if we had a choice? Oh, we do have a choice. Cool. And a lot of that comes into the way that we parent as well, because we haven't had kids in the way that the majority of people do. We haven't seen that could be possible for the majority of our lives until the last sort of couple of decades, I guess. And so we look at, wow, what an insanely wonderful privilege. I really want to get this right. What's the most loving way that I can raise up these babies? You know, you start to think about that. And that bleeds out to, what's the most loving way I can be with my friends? What do people in my community need that I can give them? And can I give it freely? Yes, I can. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
You know, it all kind of, yeah, it sounds a bit hippy-dippy, but sometimes it's about chocolate cake and whatever, you know. It's not always mung beans.
I mean, what's your own, you know, what's wrong with hippy dippy? Like, I think if it's beneficial to the individual, to society, and to the planet, like that is a really beautiful thing. One of the things that I love about my partner is, I think sometimes I kind of look at, oh, I'm going to shit on people, but it's with the best of intentions. Sometimes I look at like the pipeline of, you go through school, you go to university, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, that kind of the expectation, the conveyor belt of life. And I just think, oh man, that's like really lazy. and I've been really fortunate that I've had so many things that have disrupted that conveyor belt for me, and so I've been forced to kind of think, actually I can't do that, so what in an ideal world can I do? And my partner's exactly the same. So it's like, what does family mean to us? Family has been, we've called ourselves a family since, like, you know, it's just been us two even before the dog, and now we've extended our family. We're not thinking in maybe the traditional ways, and I think that kind of thinking is what's, not to be arrogant, and I'm not talking about us as a couple, but like when people do it on a mass scale, or when people write books about it and share that wisdom with others, that's going to change the way the planet looks as a whole.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, it's that old thing, you can't be it if you can't see it. If you don't see people living in a way different from that trajectory you just described, it's not going to happen unless someone has imagination or has those disruptions, which I very much relate to myself. There's this thing going on in Australia at the moment where because of, you know, the financial, can I swear on this podcast? Is this a swearing? the financial shitstorm that's gone on recently and will go on for quite some time, there's indexing, and that means that all the debt that people have from their university courses is going to go up a gajillion million dollars, and it's unlikely that people will pay it off in their lifetime. I went to 1 year of university part-time and then I had to drop out, and at the moment I'm just like, whew, lucky me, because that's not something I need to worry about.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, finances, I have all sorts of other financial worries, but sometimes the disruptions are really, they're really good soil to grow something in.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of thinking about it. And I love that you create content that affirms people's existence, especially when it's maybe not like a common representation for people to see. How did you come to writing?
Gosh, do you know, I think ever since I could hold a pencil and make letters, I've always written my whole life, but I didn't let myself say it until a couple of years ago. It was this secret chamber in my mind of my deepest, darkest desires. And I thought if I told anyone or if I said it out loud that they would tell me I was wrong, or they would laugh at me, or I would jinx myself. And oh, there's this real, real sort of, it's almost creepy, this creepy memory from being 6 years old and being in the playground at school and feeling other, right? I was a little queer trans kid, had no idea, and felt very lonely even though I was surrounded by people. And I felt this understanding that, oh, that's kind of okay. It's okay to feel lonely when you're surrounded by people. And then this voice came. It felt like wind coming from under my toes up through the top of my head, and it told me, one day you're going to write a book and it will help people feel less lonely. And that's exactly what's happened. This is what it's doing. I get messages every day from people all over the world saying things like, I didn't know that I needed this. I didn't know I needed that affirmation. I'm part of this. I see myself in this book. I'm not some paragraph in that's been added in because they needed a box ticked, you know.
Wow, that's
always wonderful. Always writing. But for gosh, nearly two decades I wrote other people's love stories. I married people for a living, so in Australia they're called civil marriage celebrants, and it's like the non-religious way to get married here. And when I started out, it was mostly retirees sort of doing it for a bit of pocket money for the bingo or whatever. And I would have been in my mid-20s, and there weren't really any other young people. And I'd sort of joined a few groups and got very bad vibes and went, oh, everyone's very angry with each other because they don't think there's enough business to go around. Okay, that's all right. I'll just go do my own thing. And man, it was a beautiful thing because it's sort of like what we were talking about before. If you go to weddings often or at all, you'll probably see them done in one way, but they don't have to be that way. The only things that are legally required are maybe three or four dot points. But aside from that, you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want.
You really can, but also acknowledge that some people might get upset. but I think that's a wonderful way of looking at it. So my partner and I, we are, as I said, we're kind of not very traditional. We got we had our civil ceremony on the winter solstice with like three people there, and we're having like a wedding celebration, hand fasting, custom made ceremony that we've written out painstakingly on the summer solstice. So it's like it's this really beautiful magic that we're creating between us, but there's that kind of pre-shame. I don't know if you know what I mean. The pre-shame of like, how are people going to look at me and us, and are they going to think we're super weird? Because a lot of his friends particularly.
And are they going to be really uncomfortable about the way we're doing it? Yeah. How do we make them feel better? Yeah, no, don't worry about that. You just do things your way and do it clearly. That's all you need to do. And you're inviting people into your intention and your hearts and the love that you have. That's all people want to see on a wedding day.
Yeah, we'd like to think so. We like to. But the thing is, I feel like a lot of people, they choose the safe route for so many different aspects of life. Almost like it's a video game and you can start over and you get another chance. And I feel like I feel like a lot of us have had, particularly kind of, you know, if you've had like health scares or close to death experiences, you have this sudden realization and epiphany that this is the one life you get.
Yeah, that's it. Grab it by the nuts, man, and go for gold.
Get that ball sack. Yeah. Yeah.
Just get it, get right up in there and just go as hard as you want to the ecstatic heights that you want to get to in this life, because you've got to do it, right? No one's going to do it for you.
Yeah, and no one's going to come along and give you permission. No one's going to give you permission that you can write the book that the voice in your head told you to write, or be a parent, or, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. You've got to just kind of get weird with life. Why not?
Yeah. If look, my 3-year-old wants nothing more than to be a sparkly mermaid unicorn. And my partner came home, my wife came home with a costume from Kmart. And man, my kid was so happy, just like, oh, just gliding around the house in their mermaid outfit, being incredibly sparkly and beautiful. And this is a kid who they, you know, they see their parents and their older sibling. We do that. We go hard and we do what we feel is burning inside us. It's the only way to do it. I mean, sometimes you need to have a lie down and watch your stories and have a nice cup of tea, obviously. But you don't ever stop dreaming or planning or hoping. And but the most important part of that is enacting.
Yeah.
You can marinate for too long, you know.
You can definitely, and you can give yourself all the excuses and, you know, reasons why you don't actually go and do the things that you're dreaming about. So how is it having a, I'm going to say it's a slightly weird job. How is it having a slightly weird job of being a writer?
It's really weird. It's like this weird little goblin job where I just sit in my pink cave and write my little word salads and then laugh at nothing and just scatter them off into the wherever they end up. Look, how long have I been a freelance writer for and writing this book? So, you know, I've got a couple of other books in the pipeline, as most people do when they, you know, it's like tattoos. You get one and then you're like, oh, I'll have seven more, thanks. And I'll have them yesterday. I'm terrible with planning. I'm terrible with prioritizing. So sometimes I'm just completely paralyzed by all the things, all the pots I have on the stove with really exciting, delicious projects. And the other day I had to sit myself down and go, okay, pick one and work on that. And don't just sit there, you know, just do it. And so I picked one and I finished recording my audiobook, and that is now available for free for anyone who wants it. Because I know I prefer to consume literature via audiobook a lot of the time because of brain fog. It really works for me. It's great company. I can do it lying down. I can do it while I'm driving. I can do it while I'm cooking because I get bored when I'm cooking, you know. So
also, you have like one of the best voices I've ever heard. The fact that people can listen to this wonderful book read in your voice for free. I will drop a link to
George
in the description of this podcast.
George, come on. Now I'm in a WhatsApp chat with, we're called the debut crew. It's like Australian authors who we've released our first book this year or are going to. And these people are constantly encouraging me to get into the line of work where I would be paid to say nice things with my voice, which I'm sure you can imagine what I'm alluding to. And I don't mind telling you, it's not the first time that has been suggested to me. But frankly, I think, I don't know, I like just doing what I'm doing. I do sexy stuff for free, I guess.
I'm gonna put this on record that I was not talking about that in a sexy way. I can imagine you doing very well at that job should you ever decide to have a bit of a side hustle.
I mean, it's great to have options.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not? Indeed. Especially in this weird, wonderful, creative role that we find ourselves in. This is a quick break in the proceedings to give a massive shout out to Process Productions, who've joined the Rebel Patreon tier. Thank you so much, and I love your work.
Can I answer a bit more of the question? Because I will admit that I forgot what you asked me and just kept talking. So,
I love that.
And usually when I'm doing interviews, I've been doing a buttload during this publishing period, and often I don't actually know what people have asked me. I just start talking and really hope that somehow matches up with the question. I've been on the other side of things for so long. I've been in broadcasting for about 20 years, so I'm really used to asking the questions, but being on the other side of it is very, woo. So you asked me what it's like to have this weird job as a writer. And I think, oh, it's magic. It's magic. My work schedule is defined by the things I dream of. And I have the luxury of hope and of creativity. And if I get stuck, I just go to a different place. I go, like, I was in a swimming pool a few weeks ago, and then all of a sudden I was in the hydrotherapy pool on a Sunday morning, just bobbing away there. And then I was surrounded by an entire male football team, and I went, oh gosh, that's interesting. And I felt very scared and very intimidated. And then I went, oh, hold on, why am I scared and intimidated? And then I talked to one of them, and I said, are you guys a football team? And he was like, oh yes, we like to come on a Sunday and have a bit of a warm down session after blah, blah, blah. And then as I was talking to him, I was not listening to what he was saying, and an entire plot of a novel just like exploded in my head. And by the time I'd finished my hydrotherapy program, I had chapter outline. I needed to get a pen and paper, or like I got to my phone. I was just like, sent myself a little email of all the things. So, you know, what a fun job, really. So I write books, I write opinion pieces. Tomorrow I'm delivering training on how to get published to people who have things burning inside them that they want to get out into the world. All sorts of things, you know, there's no limitations really. And being a disabled creative, often it can feel like there are a lot of limitations, but you just sort of have to wangle it and just, I don't know, fluff it a bit and just make it a bit warm and gushy, and then you can meld it to your own purposes.
That was going to be my next question, is how does your disability inform your creative practice?
Does it ever? Gee whiz. I'm just like, there's this thing flying around Twitter at the moment where they ask, why do people follow you? And I don't know what to say to answer that particular meme question or whatever it is, but I think it's something along the lines of, I get really mad when people are incorrect, and then I say stuff and then people go, yeah, that's right, but then nothing changes. So I think my disability informs that I'm real crotchety about stuff. And whenever I'm on a panel or being interviewed by someone I know, like as a friend, I'll always check in with them. Did I sound really angry and militant and like, fuck everyone? But I get this consistent feedback. No, you were so kind and warm and inclusive. And I'm like, but I have all this rage burning inside of me, but I think I must channel it in a way that it's more like, you know, you catch more flies with honey. You don't necessarily change policy with just pointing fingers at people. It's more about, hey, these people exist, maybe we should consider them too, wouldn't that be great? That kind of approach. So it also informs the type of writing I do, the type of publications that I will work for. I got a really great gig for a while doing a monthly opinion piece for a disability website. That was fantastic because they were so supportive of I guess nurturing a new person in the field. They paid fairly, they helped with really great edits because I'm, you may have picked up that I'm a little bit verbose, and sometimes I need a bit of reining in because I get off on these tangents.
But we love tangents here.
It's where the gold is, isn't it? Absolutely. Really, you just end up meandering along, like, oh, look at that. There's a thing I never thought of. Yes, is there any other way I want to answer that question? I guess, look, I have the drive and the ideas where I could work 40 hours a day and it wouldn't be enough. But at the moment, my main priority is parenting, and then there's disability management of my own stuff. And then when I have time, I write. So a lot of the time it's writing in the cracks. Like I'll think of something while I'm stacking the dishwasher, and I'll stack the dishwasher with one hand and type into my phone with the other. And then later when I have time, I'll, you know, fill it out a bit more.
Just, yeah,
often the best ideas are on the fly, you know?
Yeah. when you're when you're walking or showering or making
Yep.
some food
Yep.
or talking to
Yeah.
a football team in a hydrotherapy pool, obviously.
Sure. Obviously, isn't that how everyone gets an idea?
I mean, like maybe we should all do that for inspiration. It doesn't have to be a football team, could be a rugby team or a
They
netball
could play hockey. Yeah,
team.
totally.
Any
Where are
kind of,
the
not to be a pervert.
lacrosse players going
Yes.
to warm down?
Yeah, exactly. Completely lost my train of thought now. Thank you.
Yeah, it was quite a spectacle to behold.
I can imagine.
Unfortunately my kid's swimming lesson changed day, and I'm a bit devastated because I don't get to hang out with the footy dudes anymore. But
Oh
I
no.
know it's very sad. But
Wow.
who knows
So,
who I'll run into on a Saturday.
well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear you say, you've got so much rage kind of bubbling underneath. Because it's true. When you listen to what you're saying and the way you're communicating, you're clearly very wise and very pragmatic and very tactful with how you come across. And I do think there is truth in that, you get kind of like angry disabled people railing against ableism, and that really doesn't get us many places. I think anger is good if you can channel it into a productive action, but otherwise it's just people bitching to each other, isn't it?
Yeah. I really want to tell you a story about something that happened recently. So I think last time I spoke to you was for a community radio show here in Australia, and around that time there were Nazi protesters turning up to turf protests in Melbourne in Australia, and that was a really scary time. And one of my, so I get all these emails all the time saying, hey, do you want to do this? And I look at it and go, sure. And so if it's boring, I just will probably not do that unless it's really good pay. But often it's really interesting things. So I had the opportunity to what's it called? Chair a panel discussion after a documentary screening at our local town hall. So I live in regional Victoria, so sort of in the middle of the state. There's lots of farms, and it's about 90 minutes from the capital city, right? So there's a lot of families. There's a lot of creative people around here, and there's a really big trans and gender diverse population. So there's the documentary that was screened. It's on Netflix, I think, worldwide, and it's called The Dream Life of Georgie Stone. It's about a young trans woman who changed policy here in Australia and has just been a lifelong advocate through her own journey of growing up and transitioning, and actually has gone on to star on Neighbours. So I'm guessing, does it still screen over there?
Oh, people are obsessed with Neighbours over here.
People
Yeah,
are so hot for Neighbours, aren't they? Yeah.
I think it stopped, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it stopped over here because the UK no longer wanted us. And so they didn't have the money. I don't really understand what goes on. But anyway, so I chaired this discussion, and I just thought, I booked this in well before all the protests were going on. And then a few days beforehand, these horrifying scenes were going on where the police were siding with the Nazis and keeping them safe. And it
Yeah.
was just really devastating footage that we were seeing. And that discussion after this documentary screening turned into this town hall community care meeting. It was incredible. It was this incredible, tender space where a lot of families came, a lot of parents came who have young trans and gender diverse children, and all they want to do is protect their babies. They just
Yeah.
want to know, how can we make their life less horrifying? Like, we can't shield them from what's happening, and from the fact that there are people who think they don't have a right to exist in the the healthy and affirmed way ways that they are. What can we do? What can we do to support these kids? And what can we do if we see transphobia happening? And it was just, you know, we all walked out of that evening just feeling a bit stronger and less alone. And that's, you know, that's the power of being together and being in a community and uniting in the face of really scary things that are sent to divide us. It's incredibly powerful what you can do when you share a space together with a common goal.
Yeah, and having a compassionate mindset rather than a fearful or reactive or defensive one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that. You've put something so lovely in your podcast guest form. You've said that if there isn't something to highlight the wonder of who you are in the public discourse, you should absolutely make that art in whatever form speaks to you. Please expand on that. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be polished. Just start. Just pick up a pen or a paintbrush or your phone and record a voice memo or whatever it is that you want to do. If you have a leaning towards something, if you are distracted by yarn every time you go to the local craft shop, just get some and see what happens. I've got this thing at the moment with I've got a real bee in my bonnet about everlasting daisies. So there's these, I think they're called paper daisies sometimes too, and they grow all around the fields here in spring and summertime. And they feel kind of crunchy and they look like this perfect expression of geometry in nature. So it's the, what's it called? The Fibonacci sequence, right? So you see this incredible spiral in these flowers and they come in all different kinds of colors. And there's something about them. I just want to collect them and dry them and keep them. I don't know what for, but I know I need to do that. So so that's happening. I don't know what is going to happen with them. I think they might become a book cover. I don't know. I can almost see it, but not quite. So I know I just need to gather and experiment and not, I don't need to show anyone. I don't need to explain it. I don't need to justify it. I just need to explore.
Yeah.
And we never know what's going to happen. Sometimes exploration is conversation. Sometimes it's saying yes to a sensitivity read for a friend and then you end up getting a book deal 2 weeks later. Sometimes it's helping someone at the grocery shop to reach something high up on a shelf and then you get to talking and then all these incredible domino effects and ripples happen. I think art changes everything. It makes everything better. It doesn't have to be anything in particular. If it feels art-like and creative and fulfilling to you, if it makes your heart feel that electric pulsing kind of fizzy, oh, this feels good, I'm going to keep doing this, then just have a go. If you're not hurting anyone, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you don't show anybody, even if you just make, I have this thing where I say to people, kiss people like to ask you, you know, like, have you got any advice for me as a writer or a creative? And I'm like, make shit art, you know?
make
something shit, make a bunch of shit stuff, and then eventually maybe something will not be shit, but either way you're probably gonna feel better.
Oh, 2 weeks ago I read out my teenage diaries on stage at a writer's festival. They were so shit, they were embarrassing. They were terrible, George. They were truly, woefully terrible. And I felt sick about it. I got this email saying, hey, do you want to do this? And I nearly threw up. And then I thought, well, I have to, because that will be great. Of course it'll be great. And it was. It was wonderful. And one of the most wonderful things was sitting next to me was this very tall, very beautiful man called Reese. And he writes YA, young adult, fantasy, horror kind of stuff. And now we're Instagram friends and we're talking about the TV show Smash that was out about 10 years ago that we're both obsessed with. Yay. Shit art led to that happening.
Yeah.
So good.
So good. I think art like connects people in ways like nothing else does. It's really like this beautiful thing that we have. Yeah. So I ask all of my podcast guests this. And you are definitely a mythical creature. You're part of the Mythical Creatures Club, being trans, non-binary, disabled, queer. If you were a mythical creature, what would you be and why?
I would be a panda that's made out of fairy floss, but also just random craft supplies would just fall out of my belly randomly. There would be lots of half-finished projects, and I would leave a trail in my wake, and everyone would rejoice. Oh, there's that craft panda. We love them. And they're just so cuddly and fluffy, and they love to sleep and just roll around.
I love that so much. That's a brand new mythical creature. Would you have like pink blossom for hair as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh. Absolutely. I'm really glad you asked, because I hadn't thought of that, but of course.
I love this. I feel like this, yeah, absolutely. That kind of, yeah. Wow, nailed it. Jasper,
oh, thanks.
You tolerate my ridiculousness with such compassion and heart. Thank you so much. Do you have any like excerpts or poems or anything you want to share with our listeners?
Okay, so I do. You gave me a heads up, and so I've selected like five things because I couldn't pick one. So I'm going to give you some options. So I can read a thing about specialists and making them suffer, like medical specialists. I can read a thing about outrage, trauma dumping, consent, vulnerability, and compassion. Mm-hmm. I can read a thing about powerlifting, and I think you want that one, don't you?
Well, I've started lifting, and
oh, have you?
And I love it, and it like it gives me joy, you know, akin to only kind of like writing or being on stage or like
yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, but continue. Mm-hmm. What else have you, what else is in your arsenal?
I beg your pardon. Oh, arsenal. I'm sorry, I had to make that stupid joke.
Candy panda ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it was only three. I also exaggerate a lot. So those are the three. Which door would you like to choose?
I wrote like a really horny poem on Twitter yesterday.
Yes.
Yes. That was about the gym. So I feel like we need to hear the powerlifting.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hear you. All right. Okay. I don't think this has a name.
Yes.
It's just powerlifting. All right. It's Thursday morning and my pupils are pinpricks of joy. Jessie has to say my name twice before I stop and take in what she's saying, that to lift the bar on my back safely, I need to be slow. Do not rush this. We have my playlist blasting and Teddy Thompson is singing that Leonard Cohen cover, his velvet voice sliding around crack and anal sex while I engage my core. Let the bar roll back onto my shoulders. Check my grip. Can you take more? I think for a moment and nod, and once I place the bar back in the frame, she adds a couple more silver weights. By the time I go, I've squatted with 30 kilos on my back, somehow with knees that crack and burn when I stand or roll over in bed. I can do it all, and I'm going to do it all. I'm a true believer, and the soundtrack of my internal monologue has shifted from moody folk to cocksure metal. The next day, I'm stiff and sore, but everything softens the more I move. I feel invincible. But it's Saturday that blows my head off my shoulders. The muscles around my knees seem to have calmed down from their inflammatory tantrum, and they're holding the knobbly spherical troublemakers in a way that makes movement fluid and easy. I've never felt like this. Do people know about this? It's a common story. Transitioning brings you into your body. I'm no longer dissociating 24/7, and everything makes sense in small and unexpected increments. A little thought crouches at the edges on Sunday morning. You can't outrun me forever, but I brush it away and sweep it out the window on the breeze. I put the kids in the car and drive an hour to my sister's place. We have a bonfire, play with two Labrador puppies. I ask my niece, who works in agriculture, her thoughts on my litany of romantic lefty ideas, and she patiently explains why having a Marama dog isn't a good idea, why beehives can be housed elsewhere, and that we don't need to worry about food shortages just yet. I've left my partner at home to rest, and when we get home hours later, she slept all afternoon. I can't imagine going that long without lifting a barbell. My youngest brings me the 3 kilo weights to the couch as if by osmosis. Maybe I'm staring at them hungrily and they've noticed. On Monday evening, I've been sent to bed unaware that I'd been crying for half an hour until the pillow is wet on my cheek. I've ricocheted from bravado to a pain flare. I can't feel the pain in my body, but I know it's there because all of me is cold and hollow. The mechanics in my mind are slow to come to life. Drinking a glass of water doesn't work. I spill it all over myself. The catastrophe of it, these tiny incremental gains of stamina, of muscle, of possibility, and I've hurled myself off a cliff like a fuckhead. All the building blocks tumble away out of sight, crashing and crumbling to dust. On Tuesday, I realised that some ableist nonsense got into my head, and because I could do these things with my body, I thought that I was cured. Worse, I thought that meant life would be better. The shock of it drains everything to grey, and I lose my grip on what is real and what is daydream. I'd never come this far before, and to lose it all feels like forever. But strong isn't just muscles and sinew. It is mind and hope, springing like a puppy all up in your grill with joy and saliva and mud. Strong is starting slow. Again, it is creeping up the stairs one at a time. Even when the pain is crashing and crashing through every part, every hair, every memory, every skin cell, it is rest and care and compassion. Strong is letting people see you and being proud. My soundtrack shifts from cocksure metal to optimistic folk. Probably some harmonies, definitely some mandolin. And that's it.
Wow. I'm going to take a minute because I cried. It's so heart. It's so heartbreaking and relatable. As someone who is also disabled and who has begun lifting weights and finds like a great joy in it, and you have those moments of, I did that thing, maybe now I'm cured, and life is going to be like vastly different. And then
I'm strong now. Yeah,
you're not strong now. Like you're, but well, you know, you can be strong,
but you are. Yeah. You have always been strong. You will always be strong. It just looks different to other people. I should give some context as well. That poem I performed at an event for the first time called Stripped Queer, which a wonderful writer and performer, Frankie Valentine, here in Melbourne in Australia, organizes. And it's basically how many, four of us get up on stage, we remove our coat or gown or whatever, and then we all sit on stage naked, and one by one we get up and read our writing as well as the writing of other queer authors. So that I read that in the nude. So that was an incredible experience. It healed parts of my brain that had been so broken, and I regard myself completely differently after doing that.
It's such a, it's It's just so, sorry, I'm still kind of reeling from it. It's a really incredible
No.
poem. I can only imagine being in that situation as well. Watching you read it live is that much more powerful as well.
Yeah, it just doesn't work on the page in the same way. It has to be felt by the person who read it and said it. Just I don't know if it would work on a page.
And some poems are just like that. Page poetry versus
Yeah.
spoken word, I think, is, sometimes they're two very different beasts.
Yep.
Wow. And I just love
Oh, thank you.
hearing from other disabled people who lift, who work out, who use their bodies in ways that we as disabled people aren't maybe expected to use them.
I never expected it. Oh my God, I never expected it. I only started lifting because I was doing lung rehab. I'd been hospitalized with double pneumonia, and my physio helped me heal my lungs, and I just kept going. I just kept turning up, and then we started lifting, and ooh, that is a good feeling. It's just incredible. Just incredible, doesn't it? Do you love it?
I fucking love it. Like, I love it so much. And then when you're like, do you know what, for this set I'm gonna add like maybe another like
Yes.
5 kilograms, and you're like, yeah. And then you do it and you're like, did you see that? Did anyone else fucking see that?
Yeah. To fucking see what I just fucking did with that metal. I'm so metal. Yeah.
So fucking metal, so fucking metal. There's some days I like, so I hit a new PB like a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And this means that every time from now on, I will be able to lift that at the gym like a
Oh.
jackass. And then I had a really bad, well, I had a like I so I get hemiplegic migraines where the left side of my body doesn't work. We think it's that, we're not really sure. And these last for kind
Sure.
of like
Yeah.
9, 10 days. And then sometimes I don't have the headache. And when I don't have the headache, I'm able to go to the gym, I still go, but I just don't really have use of lefty. And so I
Yeah.
end up lifting like double the weight in my right arm than I do in my left. And the trainers just kind of look at me like, what the fuck is going on? And having that like real kind of pain of like, I was lifting so much more even just last week, and now I can barely lift, the little banana weights.
Yeah, but it's dynamic, it's your strength has gone from physical to something else for a little while.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I probably won't always feel like that.
Oh, I get so shitted off though when it happens to me. I'm just like, fuck this, and I'm never doing it again. And I hate weights, and I hate everything, and I hate everyone. But it's very easy to be philosophical sitting here with my microphone in my little goblin cave. But I too crack the shits quite regularly.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that so much. Thank you so much for sharing all of that and all your
Oh, thank you.
gorgeous, gorgeous wisdom, because I think you've like given us a really lovely like healing episode today, which is so needed.
Well, we all deserve it. Hey, we all deserve a bit of care
Oh
and
yeah. Do you
compassion.
have any final words to share with the listeners?
What do I want to? Well, if they're listening to you, they're already halfway there, I think. Just you've got to elevate the voices that elevate you. If you see something or hear something or read something that makes your heart swell and makes you feel more like yourself, tell someone else and ask them to pass it on. And if we keep paying it forward and passing it around, we will only get better and better.
I love that. I love that. Jasper, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you.
Thanks, George. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a delight.